Welcome to the Shortwave Report for February 3rd, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and The Voice of Russia. We'll begin with Spanish National Radio. Unemployment rates in the Eurozone have reached the highest level since the introduction of the euro currency in 1999. The Spanish Supreme Court has refused to throw out the case against Judge Balthasar Garzon for ordering an inquiry into the mass killings during the Franco era. Then press clippings concerning demonstrations in support of Judge Garzon. The new government in Spain is placing restrictions on abortions. The British Navy is sending a new destroyer to be stationed off the coast of the disputed Falkland Islands. President Obama defended the use of drone attacks in Pakistan, saying that, quote, drones have not caused a huge number of civilian casualties. In fact, the drone strikes have killed between 400 and 800 civilians, including 125 children. Spanish National Radio.
A day after Europe's leaders promised to focus on creating millions of new jobs to try to kickstart the EU's floundering economy, official figures show that unemployment in the Eurozone has risen to its highest level since the single currency was introduced in 1999.
The EU Statistics Office, Eurostat, says joblessness among the 17 countries that make up the Eurozone rose to 10.4% in December, with a total of 16.5 million people out of work. The worst figures are those for Spain, where the unemployment rate stands at 23%, followed by Greece at around 20%, and the problem is likely to get worse in the coming months.
The Supreme Court in Spain has refused a request to throw out a case against Judge Balthasar Garzón, in which he is accused of overstepping his authority. Spain's internationally renowned judge argued before 7 of his peers in the court that by ordering an inquiry into mass killings by forces loyal to former dictator General Franco, he had not contravened an amnesty law which has been on the statute book since 1977.
Mr. Garzón said no amnesty could cover crimes against humanity. He added that his reasons for opening the investigation could not be deemed ideological, since the charges did not refer to political events, but to hundreds of thousands of victims whose rights had never been addressed. Judge Garzón said that the killings and disappearances of civilians at the hands of Franco supporters had been systematic, and thus a crime against humanity, and that therefore his inquiry was justified. A majority of the judges hearing Mr. Garzón's request ruled that the arguments put forward for dropping the case lacked sufficient material weight.
Returning to Madrid, Público's front page is centered on the demonstration in support of Garzón, with a large photograph of the protest with flags of the Spanish Republic. Spain's political system today is a constitutional monarchy and not a republic, and a sign demanding universal justice here. Over the headline, massive support for Garzón, with a secondary headline reading Against Impunity for Francoism. Turning to the opinion pages, Público's editorial, entitled Justice Under Suspicion, deals with the demonstration in support of Garzón. The Daily draws attention to one of the protesters' chants, referring to the toga worn by the Supreme Court justices, and says that the chant just about sums things up. The toga is dirty, the guilty one clean. Público notes that Garzón is not charged by the court's prosecutor, who it says claims not to have witnessed such a legally indefensible case in his 36 years on the bench, but by an ultra-right-wing group whose accusations were reviewed in advance by the presiding judge, who offered suggestions to make the document stronger. Publico says this is not a case of those who criticize Garzón and those who adore the man whose extradition request put Chilean dictator General Augusto Pinochet under house arrest in Britain. Rather, it's a pure case of justice. The editorial concludes that, on the one hand, there is no proof that Garzón knowingly made unjust decisions when he opened the investigation into human rights crimes in Spain, while, on the other hand, there is much proof of the resistance on the part of Spain's political and judicial authorities to grant any sort of reparation to the victims of the Franco dictatorship. Indeed, the article concludes, the guilty ones are still clean.
Spain's Justice Minister, Alberto Ruiz Gallardón, has said the reform of the abortion law is probably the most progressive thing he will do in his political life. The government plans to change the law introduced by the previous socialist government has been described by opponents as reactionary.
The new law will still allow abortion in three specific cases: pregnancies resulting from rape, pregnancies with fetal malformation, and pregnancies which threaten the mother's life. But in an interview with the Spanish state television, the minister explained that the new law would recognize the rights of the unborn baby to live and would reintroduce the need for parental consent in cases of pregnant girls under the age of 18.
Britain's Defence Ministry has confirmed that a Royal Navy ship, one of the new Type 45 air defence destroyers, is to be deployed off the coast of the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic. The ministry said it was a routine deployment and HMS Dauntless would replace a frigate currently stationed there.
A spokesman said the deployment had nothing to do with increased tensions between the UK and Argentina about who owns the Falkland Islands. But the news is likely to upset the government of Cristina Fernández Kirchner, which has recently stepped up the war of words with Britain about Argentine claims to the islands. The move comes ahead of Prince William's deployment to the region as an RAF search and rescue pilot and the 30-year anniversary of the start of the Falklands conflict.
U.S. President Barack Obama has defended his administration's unprecedented use of armed drones. In an interview on Google and YouTube, he acknowledged that the United States was carrying out drone strikes inside Pakistan, which the country has complained violated sovereignty. President Obama made the comment after he was asked how he feels about the large number of civilians killed by drones since he took office.
Drones have not caused a huge number of civilian casualties. For the most part, they have been very precise, precision strikes against Al-Qaeda and their affiliates. And we are very careful in terms of how it's been applied.
It's reported that U.S. drone strikes have killed between 400 and 800 civilians, including 175 children. The British Bureau of Investigative Journalism, which is based in City University, London, says the total number of people killed by drones is as high as 3,000.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970 and podcasting at www.rtve.es/radio/radio-exterior. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Pakistan denounced the unexpected acknowledgement of the drone attacks by President Obama. The UK Supreme Court is to consider an appeal by WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. There have been demonstrations in the Philippines to denounce the possible expansion of U.S. military presence in the country. At the Thematic Social Forum, just held in Porto Alegre, Brazil, social movements have called for a world march against capitalism on June 5th. Ecuador is calling on the developed world to reduce consumption levels and implement environmentally friendly technologies. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Pakistan has warned the United States that it should not continue its drone attacks on targets within its national territory, while Islamabad acknowledged tactical advantages to U.S. drone strikes on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. It denounced the unexpected confirmation by Washington of attacks on its soil. The remarks from Pakistan's foreign ministry came as U.S. President Barack Obama confirmed for the first time that drone aircraft had targeted Pakistan's tribal area. Pakistani spokesman Abdul Basit told reporters, "We are of the firm view that these are unlawful, counterproductive, and hence unacceptable." U.S. diplomatic cables leaked by WikiLeaks in late 2010 showed that Pakistan's civilian and military leaders privately supported Washington's drone attacks, despite public condemnation in a country where the U.S.-led occupation of neighboring Afghanistan is very unpopular. Relations between the United States and Pakistan deteriorated sharply in 2011 over the covert American raid that killed Al-Qaeda chief Osama bin Laden in May and U.S. airstrikes that killed 24 Pakistani soldiers in November. Islamabad is now reviewing its entire alliance with the United States and has kept its Afghan borders closed to NATO supply convoys since November. Pakistan ordered U.S. military personnel to leave Shamsi Air Base in western Pakistan, widely believed to be a hub for the CIA drone program. The UK Supreme Court is due to consider an appeal by the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange against his extradition to Sweden. Britain's highest court has said seven justices will hear the arguments because of the great public importance of the issue raised by the case. A spokesman said that the issue was whether a prosecutor is a judicial authority. Julian Assange is wanted by Swedish authorities for questioning over alleged sex offences, which he denies. The 40-year-old Australian, who remains on conditional bail in the UK, claims the allegations against him are politically motivated. Assange's WikiLeaks website published a mass of material from leaked diplomatic cables, embarrassing several governments. The High Court previously approved his extradition, a decision that Assange argues was unlawful.
Dozens of activists marched outside the U.S. Embassy in Manila over the weekend to denounce a possible expansion of the U.S. military presence in the Philippines. Renato Reyes, a spokesperson for the New Patriotic Alliance, said that the protesters are opposed to the plans to realign and deploy more U.S. troops in the Philippines. He said there's concern that their country might be caught up in the rising tension between the United States and China if they allowed more U.S. troops on military bases. The Barack Obama administration is reportedly taking a number of steps to expand U.S. military power in Asia. Over the weekend, the Philippines defense minister confirmed that the country was considering a U.S. proposal to deploy surveillance aircraft in the Philippines.
Social movements participated in the 2012 Thematic Social Forum in the Brazilian city of Porto Alegre concluded their meeting with a call for a world march against capitalism on June 5. Under the slogan "Against Capitalism in Defense of Social and Environmental Justice," the international mobilization seeks to express the stance of social movements on the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, or Rio Plus 20, to take place in Brazil from June the 22nd through the 26th. The thematic social forum in Porto Alegre brought together thousands of social and political activists, as well as representatives of Chilean student groups and unionists, Spain's Indignados movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement, and the Arab Spring movement.
Ecuadorian Heritage Minister Maria Fernanda Espinosa said a forum of Latin American and Caribbean ministers underway in Quito will demand long-term actions worldwide to safeguard the planet. Addressing the 18th Regional Forum on Environment, set to end on Friday, February the 3rd, the Ecuadorian official said that Latin America is a region rich in natural resources and is going through sustained economic growth, which will allow the reduction of environmental costs that go with it. Minister Espinosa went on to say that the only way to ensure the continuity of the human species on the planet is through the reduction of consumption levels in developed countries and the implementation of environment-friendly technologies that allow greater accessibility to poor and developing countries. In addition, she expressed hopes that the Quito Declaration, to be approved at the end of the event, includes two or three strong ideas that could serve as a platform to the upcoming Rio Plus 20 summit in Brazil.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 p.m. to 3 at 11760 and from 4 p.m. to 11 at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu and now podcasting at World Radio Network, which is wrn.org. Next, Radio Deutsche Welle. Nigerian police arrested the spokesman for the radical Islamic sect Boko Haram, which is blamed for hundreds of recent killings. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on Israel to halt all settlement construction. Protests in Russia during December were the biggest since the end of the Soviet Union. February 4th is set as a day of massive protest against former President Putin, who is running to regain the post in March. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Nigeria's secret police says it's arrested the spokesman for the radical Islamist sect Boko Haram that's being blamed for hundreds of killings. A senior state security service official said the man, a Nigerian citizen, was arrested in the northern city of Kaduna in the early hours of the morning and is currently being questioned. The suspect reportedly served as a go-between for journalists and the sect. At least 185 people died in a coordinated attack on January 20th by Boko Haram in the northern city of Kano. Meanwhile, some 2,000 mourners attended a funeral service at a church in Madala for victims of the deadly Christmas Day attack by the sect. At least 44 people were killed in St. Teresa alone that day.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on Israel to halt all settlement construction. The Palestinians say they won't return to formal peace negotiations until this demand has been met. Ban was speaking after a meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank town of Ramallah. Earlier, Ban met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem. German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle was also in the region on Wednesday. He called on both sides to keep the lines of communication open. He used his visit to Jerusalem to sign an agreement granting the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Center 10 million euros over the next 10 years. In Ramallah, he announced that Germany had upgraded the Palestinian General Delegation in Berlin to the status of a diplomatic mission.
After years of political passivity, tens of thousands of Russians took to the streets several times in December in what were the biggest protests since the end of the Soviet Union. They protested against the parliamentary elections because they thought they had been rigged, and against the government of Vladimir Putin for having rigged them. Now, Russia has yet another election coming up on March 4th, one in which Putin himself will be running to retake his former post as president. But before that happens, Russia's opposition has set February 4th as a day of protest. Marika Aden now with a report on their preparations from Moscow.
How do I get to the choir practice? One passerby after the other asks the watchman at the gate, and he patiently explains the way. Choir practice is a code word for about 100, mainly young people, who are coming here to rehearse and plan something else. More protests against Vladimir Putin. Where in Moscow the planning session is taking place has to remain a secret. The group was already expelled from their former meeting place, a trendy bar, when words got out. Inside the building, author and journalist Masha Gessen is waiting. She is well known both in Russia and abroad and organizer of the meeting. The secret place and the password are a protective measure to keep Kremlin youth and their provocations away, says Masha Gessen, but it's not only that.
We have good reason not to meet in the offices of foundations known as Kremlin critics, like Memorial, for example, even though that would be much easier. We want to attract young people, so we need to have a cool atmosphere, because protesting is in these days. Before, it was mainly people of the older generation who openly opposed the Kremlin, and young people found that unsexy. I've been proud to be part of the opposition to the Kremlin for many years, but it's a good feeling to be one of many more people now.
On this night of planning, everything revolves around the 4th of February, the day when the opposition wants to take to the streets again. It is a meeting of the so-called creative group. They are discussing small but, in their opinion, important questions. How do we provide all the participants with tea to fight the cold? And how do we count the participants so that the police can't artificially diminish their number? What slogans will we shout? Even on these questions, there are many different opinions. It is another example of how diverse the opposition movement is. Many experts argue that the lack of a common leader and common ideas is a weak point of the movement. But Masha Gessen disagrees.
Вообще протестное движение должно состоять из большого количества составляющих. Это должно быть с одной стороны.
In any protest movement, lots of different kinds of people should be active. On the one hand, you need people who are willing to negotiate with the Kremlin. And on the other hand, you need those who are willing to risk conflict and getting arrested. It's true that at the moment, the only thing uniting us is a common enemy, Vladimir Putin. And at the moment, we don't even have a way to select a common leader, because in our country, civil society has been completely destroyed. First, our democratic institutions have to be rebuilt, like the media, for example.
Заново создать институты, в том числе прессы.
Мы здесь власть!
Meanwhile, it seems that Alexei Navalny, a lawyer specialized on real estate, is the most likely candidate to become the face of the opposition. Among the Russian internet community, he has gained an almost iconic status for disclosing large-scale corruption in his blog. On meetings of the opposition, no one is getting as much applause as he does, by liberals and nationalists alike. Navalny himself doesn't hide his nationalistic views, which appeals to the nationalists who are also part of the current protest movement against Vladimir Putin. In November, Navalny participated in the Ruski Marsh, a right-wing protest rally. In his widely applauded speech, he, for example, demanded the end of subsidies from Moscow to regions like the terror-shaken North Caucasus.
В политике должны участвовать не фейки, а реальные политические силы. Национализм, там, консервативное движение, национал-демократия.
Real existing forces should be engaged in politics. Nationalism or right conservatism, however you want to call it, is addressing problems that exist in reality. I don't see any danger in this movement. If they could legally participate in the political process, then they wouldn't be any more dangerous than any right or nationalistic political movement in Europe.
On the 4th of February, exactly 1 month before the date of the presidential elections, Navalny and other leading figures of the opposition are calling out their supporters to the streets again. They hope that at least 100,000 people will attend and that, like in December, it will remain peaceful. Mareike Aden, Deutsche Welle Radio, Moscow.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm very grateful for a generous donation from radio station WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, and a letter of encouragement from a listener of WPPP in Athens, Georgia. We will conclude with the voice of Russia. After announcing a loan guarantee to help Brazil develop offshore oil deposits, President Obama was disturbed to learn that the bulk of Brazil's oil will be sold to China. The voice of Russia.
President Barack Obama has suffered the second embarrassment over oil imports within the space of a week. This year, President Obama had announced a new era of energy cooperation with Brazil, promising to make America a better buyer of Brazilian oil. And how has Brazil responded to this? By deciding to sell its oil to China, of course.
Obama, who went to South America back in March 2011 to drum up new business and to hold a meeting with the newly elected president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, who, at the time, had signaled a desire for closer relations with the United States, each president criticized the trade barriers of the other's country even as they celebrated improvements in their relations, including an increase in trade that has created jobs in both places.
Obama praised Brazil as a global leader, but declined to endorse its bid for a permanent seat in the United Nations Security Council, which is considering a reorganization to give permanent membership and a greater voice to emerging powers like Brazil. Last fall, in a visit to India, Mr. Obama lent support to that country's hopes for a permanent seat as well.
Brazil and India, both temporary members of the Security Council, were among the five nations that abstained from authorizing force against Libya. They said the resolution was too broad, illustrating a desire to act independent of the traditional big powers. While Obama and Rousseff did not announce any major agreements after their private meeting and subsequent sessions with business leaders from the United States and Brazil, they did announce accords for further talks towards cooperation on economic, financial, energy, and trade issues.
Obama said to applaud that a forum of American and Brazilian corporate executives, "It's time for the United States to treat our engagement with Brazil on economic issues as seriously as we do with nations like China and India."
Around the same time, the Export-Import Bank of the United States, also known as the U.S. Export-Import Bank, proclaimed Brazil to be one of its key priorities and promised to provide Brazil a credit line in the amount of $2 billion to develop its oil industry and $1 billion to develop its key infrastructure. An unnamed source at the bank reported that much larger sums of around $20 billion could soon be discussed.
Obama at the time told Brazilians, "We want to help you with technology and enable you to safely develop these oil reserves. And when you're ready to start selling oil, we want to become one of your best customers." Fast forward 10 months, and what has Obama received in return for his investment? Brazil does not consider the U.S. to be a serious partner and instead would prefer to sell its oil to China.
As recently reported by the Washington Times, China has purchased a 40% stake in the Brazilian unit Repsol YPF, which owns the rights to drill oil and gas basins in Santos, which just happens to be the most promising field, and a 30% stake in the Portuguese company Galp Energia, which has the rights to the same field. In addition, Brazil has signed two major energy cooperation agreements with Chinese state oil companies, and China has promised to provide $10 billion in loans for development.
This striking failure shows that the U.S. has lost its political influence and attractiveness as a partner, which until recently no one has questioned. Among the numerous potential reasons, one of the most obvious causes of this historical slap in the face involves the naivety of Obama and his domestic priorities.
According to the Los Angeles Times, Brazil's decision comes on the heels of Obama's refusal to permit the building of the Keystone XL pipeline to bring oil from Canada's tar sands in Alberta to Texas oil refineries. The decision was criticized by Republicans as well as union officials, who point out that the 20,000 jobs the pipeline would bring would therefore not be created.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 10 at 12030, 13665, 9840, and 7250, or through their website, www.english.ruvr.ru. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.